Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're exploring the effect of inflation on inequality. Because people spend on different bundles of goods and services, inflation will differ quite a lot for different people. And because the calculation of the inflation basket is plutocratic, it reflects the spending patterns of higher income groups. Most people have an inflation rate, therefore, that's above the reported rate. To dig deeper into this theme, we'll feature a special interview with one of our regular voices, UBS Wealth Management Global Chief Economist Paul Donovan, who's the author of the 2015 book, The Truth About Inflation. And we'll look at the issue through the prism of a particular market, in this case, the UK. We start, where else, with our extended Q&A with Paul Donovan, author of 2015's Truth About Inflation. We began by asking him to look back to 2015 and explain why the time was right for the book then. Was it in a bid to end continuing misunderstandings about inflation? And if so, why was there this lack of coherence around the prevailing thinking?
In financial markets, the topic of inflation, particularly 2-3 years ago, was not very well understood. We were in a low inflation period, apparently, but this was actually largely an illusion caused by falling oil prices. And when you stripped those away and looked at what was lying beneath the headline numbers, the inflation situation was a little bit more significant. And in addition to that, the fact that certain groups in society, lower income groups, the elderly, were suffering a higher rate of inflation than was being officially reported was also starting to cause both political and investment difficulties.
So let's zero in on inflation inequality. Paul Donovan explains what this is and why it matters.
We're not interested in what's going on in one product market. We want to find out what's going on in lots of different markets and how that affects our standard of living. But the problem is, of course, that somebody on a low income buys a very, very different range of goods and services from somebody on a high income. And if we see a situation emerge where the sorts of things that low-income people buy are rising a lot in price, and the sorts of things that high-income people are buying are not rising in price, then you'll end up with inflation inequality. The inflation rate for a low-income person will be greater than it will be for a high-income person. And the damage that that does, of course, is that what you're doing here is undermining the standard of living of the low-income person quite significantly, but not really affecting the standard of living of the high-income person. Because average inflation numbers don't capture this complexity, they don't capture these differences, people may think that inflation is okay and standards of living aren't suffering, but actually for low-income groups in society, there may be serious damage being done to their standards of living.
Dean Turner, economist and director in the UBS UK CIO, explains why this issue is so important through the UK prism specifically.
Well, I think if we look at the inflation baskets that we typically use in the UK, and the headline index is the CPI index, it's hardly representative of what most household incomes, how they're actually spent. If we look at the largest component within the current UK index, it's actually transport, and other essentials such as food, etc., are actually much smaller in terms of weighting in the index. Now, I would argue that for lower income households, there would be significantly higher proportion of income spent on things such as food and other essentials than perhaps on other goods that might come under other sectors.
And a further UK-specific issue is that around housing, as Dean Turner explains.
The current crop of inflation measures don't actually take into account any housing costs. Now, interestingly, the Office for National Statistics are actually amending this, and we will get a new inflation measure this year called CPIH that actually includes a housing component. But even then, it still will only make up around 10% of the basket. So one could argue that that's a little bit low for lower income households.
Back to Paul. He's also recently been writing about inflation inequality and trade and tariffs. Does this area demonstrate the bigger picture point?
Generally speaking, in the United States, for example, low-income Americans tend to spend more of their money on imported goods, whereas high-income Americans, they do buy imports, of course, but more of their money goes on domestically produced services. Why does that matter? Well, if you impose a blanket tariff on imports into the United States, then the things that low-income Americans buy will be going up in price. Some of the things that high-income Americans buy will be going up in price, but quite a lot of the things high-income Americans buy will not be rising in price. So in other words, the tariff, which is basically just a tax on consumers, is a tax on consumers that targets low-income rather than high-income Americans.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the notion that perhaps when it comes to inflation, then money talks, and we'll consider what the future might hold. How different is the picture if we compare, say, developed with developing countries, or maybe the Western world with emerging markets? Is the idea that, if you like, money talks true in all markets? Paul Donovan.
Well, generally speaking, all countries will have different consumer baskets for different groups. And of course, it's not just high income versus low income. Older people spend money on a very different range of products from younger people. Older people spend on healthcare, younger people spend on education, for example. When we look around the world, inflation inequality is generally quite large in the United States because income inequality is quite large in the United States. And that means that a rich person in the United States is likely to have a very, very different consumer basket from a poor person. If you look at a more egalitarian society like Sweden, for example, the difference in spending patterns between the high income and the low income isn't as great as it is in the United States, and therefore the potential for really substantial differences in inflation is also somewhat reduced in Sweden compared to a country like the United States. Now, inflation inequality exists everywhere, but the extent of inflation inequality tends to depend on how different the consumption patterns are of high-income and low-income groups in society.
So this idea that money talks when it comes to inflation and inflation inequality seems to be more stark yet in places where there's greater economic or even political inequality. So is what we've been hearing about true in all markets? And what can and should be done to rebalance this? Well, it's very hard to balance it statistically, as Dean Turner explains.
Way of calculating measures of GDP, inflation and wealth is on a purely money-based measures, and clearly the distribution of income and wealth across society, and the UK is no exception here, is very skewed towards one end, and that will always have a skewing effect. I think it's very hard to correct for that. It would take a complete transformation of GDP accounting and inflation accounting as we know it.
Now, it's perhaps a slightly voguish idea to suggest that the existence and continuation of inflation inequality is the market's fault or the state's fault, but is to ask who's to blame the wrong question, or at least an unhelpful one, in Paul Donovan's opinion.
I think it is very dangerous to start trying to find reasons to blame either the state or markets for inflation inequality. I think a far better approach is to accept that inflation inequality exists and try and resolve how to correct that through other means, if that's what a society wishes to do. I mean, the Emperor Diocletian in the first century BCE very famously passed an edict which set prices literally in stone. And the price of one thing was not allowed to change relative to the price of another thing. And what happened? Because he had set the prices of food products too low and they couldn't change at all, nobody supplied food to the market, and there was a famine and a food shortage because the attempt to correct inflation inequality through regulation was doomed to failure. Similar sort of situation happened in the early 1970s when President Nixon in the United States put in place price controls which attempted to keep prices stable relative to one another. And all of a sudden, food started disappearing from American shops because farmers were saying, you know what, we're not going to provide food at this sort of fixed price regime. So I don't think we should say inflation inequality can be corrected through regulation. I think what we should try and do is find ways of creating a more egalitarian standard of living, accepting the fact that some prices will change more than other prices will in a properly functioning economy.
And briefly, and if we look more broadly, for example, to compare with other markets across the whole European bloc, is the landscape affected similarly by broadly the same issues?
GDP accounting and inflation accounting, there's pretty standard agreed ways of doing this. In fact, there are harmonised indices and harmonised methodologies for calculating these variables across Europe. Therefore, you know, the same issues are likely to be prevalent, but this is very much open for change, and I would expect that we see lots of progress in this area in terms of GDP and inflation accounting in the years ahead, because ultimately it's very, very important for policymakers.
Finally on the programme, let's look to the future. What does it hold then? A continuation of the status quo? No, things will change, says Dean Turner.
I certainly don't think the status quo will continue, least of all within the way we calculate statistics within the UK. There's been a big review taking place into national statistics in the UK with much more focus on taking in much more real-time and much more granular data and actually using information from across government departments rather than calculating these numbers from what are essentially surveys. Now, as we're aware, survey-based data on its own is only a representation of reality. Therefore, if we actually make the transformation to actually using more real data, much more granular, much deeper source, much wider scope, then that should give us a better handle on how the economy is performing, not just at an aggregate level, which clearly, as economists, we tend to focus on probably a little bit too much. But once we have this much wider data, then that will enable us to assess some of the more important impacts that are happening in society, and these will include the distributional consequences. So in my mind, it will take some time, but certainly what the future promises to deliver in terms of national statistics should enable policymakers to look at these issues and hopefully address some of these issues much more effectively going forward.
And the last word to Paul Donovan. We spoke back in 2015 regarding Paul's book about who or what will write the next chapter in the story of inflation. For example, and we discussed this then, greater sophistication in inflation accounting. Will that be at the heart of the next phase of the story?
I think one thing as society ages is that we need to start paying more attention to the inflation rate faced by the elderly, because elderly people do tend to have very different consumption patterns from average in society. And older person inflation is starting to become quite a significant issue. Generally, the older population face a higher inflation rate because of things like healthcare costs. Now, the UK and Australia already publish inflation statistics specifically for older people. And the United States has now introduced an experimental consumer price inflation measure for people over the age of 62. So we're already starting to see a degree of sophistication creeping in, and this has started to emerge over the last couple of years. But I think we need more of this. There needs to be better understanding that if you are running an education charity, for example, the cost of running that charity in the future is not going to rise in line with average inflation, but with a very different inflation rate. If you're trying to provide for your old age, you need to assume that your cost of living is going to be higher in the future, perhaps, than it is today, and you need to account for that. So I think it is a greater understanding of the fact that inflation is not just the single CPI number that is broadcast around the world. It's a more varied concept than that. And to try and work out best to manage the risks of significantly different inflation rates, depending on who you are in society and what it is you're trying to achieve with your income in the future.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 125th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.